Hi, I'm Rosemary. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, and welcome to our speaker meeting on Easy Does It But Do It. We have three great speakers for you, although I don't know that they're great. Well, we'll reserve judgment. You can be sober a long time but still be insane, you know that. Okay, let's have a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. Okay, now we get to our good meeting. I was thinking at the last meeting, you know, they say like AA, your life, a sober in AA should be beyond your wildest dreams. And this is beyond my wildest dreams, but not the way I expected. When I first came in, I thought, oh, wow, I can hardly wait to be a chair at a convention. Here I am. Okay, so now I'm introducing our speakers. And our first speaker is Nancy H. from Wisconsin. And I hope she gives me some good tips on doing it.
Good morning. My name's Nancy Horn, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Hartford, Wisconsin. My home group is the Hartford Women's Big Book Group, and I am my sobriety date is February 15th, 1983. This morning, when I was reading Daily Reflections, it was talking about the how of the program. And it was talking about, you know, do I have the capability to be honest with, you know, and thinking about the honesty that I need to do to keep working this program. Am I open-minded? You know, a lot of times I have to learn that I have to listen. One time I heard a speaker say, in the quiet moment, in the moment of silence before saying the serenity prayer, she said a short prayer to say, you know, God, help me hear what you want me to hear and to say what you want me to say. So I hope I can say something today that will help you, and I'm sure I'm going to hear something I know that I need to hear. And it also talks about open-mindedness and being open to other things. You know, I can be very closed sometimes and think, you know, it's all about me and that, you know, I know the right thing to do. And then am I willing? Am I willing to go to any lengths? Am I willing to do what I need to do? Am I willing to listen to my sponsor? Am I willing to do what I expect my sponsees to do? The last couple years, you know, we think we walk into this program and everything is going to be wonderful. Well, when I walked into the doors of AA before I came here, I had been in another 12-step program for a number of years. And then I found my way to Al-Anon because I thought I could maybe cure my husband. And I did not have a problem. And then I found my way into the doors of AA. And it wasn't because, you know, I didn't come at first, you know, because I didn't think I can't be an alcoholic. And finally, in 1983, right after I had raised my hand as an alcoholic, I had the privilege of being at Founders Day, and I heard a speaker, and she talked about being a periodic. And she was talking to me. She was telling my story. Because I was not a daily drinker. You know, to me, an alcoholic was somebody who lived on Skid Row and drank out of a brown paper bag and, you know, didn't have a home. And I mean, I had a home. I had a family. I had a job. I went to work every day. But when I drank, I did not drink like a normal person. When I drank, I didn't know if it was going to be one drink or many drinks. When I first tried not drinking, before I came into the program. One of the things I did is I thought, well, I'll drink scotch. I don't like scotch. So if I drink scotch, it tastes bad, I'm not going to drink so much. Do you know you can learn to like it? So switching didn't help. You know, I tried many things. And I'm very grateful that when I walked through the doors, I have not felt the need to pick up another drink. Not that it never crossed my mind. You know, every once in a while, I'll see an ad. And I think, oh, that's good. I've never tried that. And I know what will happen to me if I do pick up. And so what do I do? You know, the topic of this session is easy does it, but do it. What do I have to do? Well, for me, it means I have to have a sponsor. Having a sponsor means that I call her. I have a sponsor that I'm able to see at meetings. And we talk. And it's someone I can go to. It means I go to meetings. I go to a lot of meetings. Recently, in the last couple of years, I've had some real difficulties at home. And my husband is disabled, and I was a caregiver. And in January, well, really last December, I had to sit in a room at a nursing home rehab facility and tell him he couldn't come home because my doctor had told me I could no longer care for him at home without affecting my health more than it had. And that was one of the hardest things I had to do. But the awesome thing is probably I was doing some things that enabled him to not do what he needed to do for himself. And in May 21st, he was able to move back home again. And so, that's one of the things, living this program one day at a time, you know, doing what I have to do, and not going all crazy. You know, I can get really nuts sometimes. And, you know, the woulda, shoulda, coulda, and all thinking all the things that I should be doing, and then I hear, well, thou shalt not should on thyself, Nancy. And so, you know, but I know I have to go to meetings, and I'm really privileged to have a bunch of meetings close to my house. There's three meetings I can walk to. And our women's group is just awesome, and the women in that meeting have supported me through a lot of stuff. I have other meetings that I go to that are really near and dear to my heart. I'm active in service. You know, I've helped start meetings, and it's just awesome to see them grow. It's just awesome to see people come into the program and grow. Sometimes I used to think I was the world's worst sponsor because I'd sponsor these women and they'd go out and drink. And, you know, what I really found out in the big book, I mean, it's not, you know, it says when all else fails, go out and work with another. You know, it's not working with another because I have any magic words to say that are going to make you stay sober. My actions in going out and working with another helps keep me sober. I had a friend once that used to wonder why, you know, if I was struggling, why I would call her. Because when she was struggling, she'd always wanted, who can I call that's going to give me these magic words that are going to make me not drink? Well, nobody can say anything that's going to make me not drink. The only thing that I have is a higher power that by the grace of God, I do not have to drink today. And so I have to work on my spiritual program. And this program has gotten me involved in a church that I love dearly. And it was a journey. You know, and everything I do in this program, really, for me, is a journey. One day at a time. But it's, you know, the easy does it. You know, what I can use that as an excuse. I can say, oh, easy does it. I don't have to do that. You know, but the second part of the slogan is, but do it. You know, do it. Go to meetings. Get a sponsor. You know, read the literature. We have such awesome literature. I've subscribed to Grapevine the entire time in my program. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you come go to meetings, you come home, and you're just filled with anxiety. You know, all those things. But it's only, you know, when I sit down and read something, there's a calming peace that comes. When I go to a meeting, there's a calming peace that can come. I know there's other there who share. I mean, I don't have anything unique. I had a sponsor once that told me, you know, when it came to the fourth step, did you have to make up any words to describe what you had done? No. Well, couldn't that be because someone else has already done them also? And I think of women that I have had, you know, shared fourth and fifth step stuff with. And I think of one woman that she just agonized for months about telling me something, you know. And when she finally did, it was like, this is what we've been agonizing over? You know, and I just had to remember that, you know, maybe the thing that I'm agonizing over, you know, it's not that big of a thing. And by sharing with someone else, I get it out, and it makes it less, and it makes it better, and it one day at a time. This too shall pass, you know, all those little things. I once, you know, heard somebody talking about the ism. You know, we have alcoholism. And one of the things, I've heard a lot of different acronyms about related to what ism stands for, but one of them that I liked was incredibly short memory. You know, if I'm, you know, I can forget. You know, it's so easy to forget and think that, oh, a drink will make it better. No, a drink won't make it better. And I've done a lot of things, you know, over the years that, you know, you walk through this stuff. You know, I suffer from a food addiction. And so I know that that is something I need to work with. I have not had a cigarette for over 30 years. And that is something that, to me, I think, you know, that would never have been possible. But one of the things I also know is that in order to do some of these things for longer periods of time, you have to get older. And you know, and you know, I think I was, you know, I was in my 30s when I came into this program, and I still like to think of myself as in my 30s. And it's like, you know, well, at least you qualify for senior discounts. That's a good thing. You know, I always used alcohol. I felt like I had this God-shaped hole. You know, I had a friend that talks about this God-shaped hole that we try to fill with something, and I always... There's so many, I mean, I could go out shopping, I could gamble, you could use, you know, I'm so grateful there's a lot of things that I never did, because it's like, I could be obsessive and compulsive about just about anything. And the only thing that I know that will fill that hole is my higher power. In the morning, I have to get up and say, God, I need help today. I'm an alcoholic. I need to remember that I'm an alcoholic every morning, because I have an incredibly short memory. And I need to know that one day at a time, you know, I can walk through this program. You know, I always like the denial is not a river in Egypt. You know, that was one of my favorites. Didn't even know I am lying. Denial is a big thing. And that's another thing that I have to work on. I have to know, am I being honest? Am I being open-minded? Am I being willing? And I have to do that one day at a time. And I think I'm getting close to the end of my time, and I'd like to close with my little section. I also want to say I had an awesome talk this morning in the shower. And so I hope that I said something that helped you during this time. And but it's, I'm going to take a little liberty with this, and this is from Keys of the Kingdom. The last 27 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But also I have known a great deal of joy and peace that is a handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people, I am truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligation, require relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and need never return. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys of the kingdom. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Good job. It was good to hear you. I noticed that your talk was, I don't know how it compares to the shower, but it did talk about, you know, doing it. You have to do the work of AA. You didn't sit or talk about twiddling your thumbs. You worked the program. Okay, our next speaker will be Floyd C., and he lives in... I have to have a resentment comment just so no one thinks I got all better. He used to, no, he came from New York, my native land. And, but now he's in Florida, smiling and happy. Okay. So, thank you. And here you go.
Hello, everybody. My name is Floyd, and I'm a happy alcoholic. But for the grace of God, the program of Alcoholic Anonymous and the fellowship of Alcoholic Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since April 28, 1983, at the end of time, in a row. And for that, I'm truly, truly grateful. You know, it's amazing to me how life works. I came to Alcoholic Anonymous in 1983, and in 1985, I went to my first international convention in Montreal, I think it was. And when I got there, I heard something that I needed to hear. It was at the end of a meeting, and the next meeting was about to start. And the lady raised her hand in the audience and said, "I want to speak." And the chairperson said, "No, we ran out of time." And the incoming chairperson said, "Let her speak." And she simply said, "I don't have much to say. I only have to say that God don't need to hear my prayer as much as I need to pray." And that got me. I heard what I needed to hear that day. I thought that God needed me. I didn't know I needed him. And it changed my life completely. It was the first time in my life that I ever saw 40,000 people at one place at one time who didn't drink. I was overwhelmed. Overwhelmed. I could not believe that many people in one room didn't drink. But I said to myself that day, if I live and breathe, I will never miss another conference or international convention. And I've been to five. And if I live and breathe and the sun shines and the creek don't rise, I'll be in Atlanta in 2015. So with that said, I'd like to share a little story with you that I heard in 1990. I'm not sure where it was at a conference. And a lady was in the old-timers panel. And she say, I was in my bed sick. And I got this letter asking me to speak at the international convention. She said, I know I was going. I know I was going. And April 22nd of this year, I went into the hospital. I had an aneurysm in my belly. And I went to major surgery. And I think I woke up a few days later. And the doctor looked at me and he shook his head. And he said, it wasn't me. Simple as that. He said, I didn't do this. And I said, thank you. But he kept saying funny stuff like, you look real good. You look too good to be sick. And I'm saying, wait a minute, I'm getting scared because, you know, when people say you started looking good at the end of something, it's time for you to die. And I kept saying, don't say that to me. Don't say I look good. He said, but you look good. And all his team would come by and they would look at me and say, wow, you look real good. And I'm scared. I'm telling my wife, I don't know, man. She said, what are you afraid of? They say you look good. I said, Corey, you don't know. When they say you look good, you're going to die. She said, but you know you made that commitment to go to that convention. We done signed up and done paid for this trip. You going. I said, well, I better get well then. That was May this year. And again, but for the grace of God, I'm here today. I mean, I feel fantastic. You know, I know this ain't about crying and all of this stuff, but I just got to tell you, AA works. You know, it really, really works. Easy does it, but do it. You know, who cares about that kind of stuff? I heard that stuff so many times. What that mean? Now, anybody who's been sober a little while, know, man, when you first get this program, you come in here, you jump in, feet first, you go hand and foot. You want to save the world. That was me. I got involved in so many things, man. I ain't never stayed home. I was in service. I was doing this and I was doing that, all in the name of AA. Just like it says in that book. Man, I was on committees. I was writing letters. I was just going for AA. Man, I had a good time. And for the first 12 years, I would imagine, of my sobriety, I was just involved in AA. And one day I got tired. I said, damn, you know what? I'm tired of this. I'm gonna sit home. I'm going to make meetings in my neighborhood, and I'm going to enjoy the fruits of my labor. And I had either 12 or 13 years sobriety, sober. And I got the house and the car and the white picket fence and all that good stuff came just like they promised in the book. It happened. It happened to me. And I sit back, and it was enough meetings around in my neighborhood that I could make a meeting every day and not go to the same one twice in a week. And so I said, Floyd, that's what you're going to do. You're going to make 7 meetings a week, and you're going to enjoy sobriety. And I tell you, I started going to those 7 meetings, and a funny thing happened. I started seeing the same people at those meetings every single time I went. And they always complaining, and they always bitching about what's wrong. And I'm saying, how come these people, I kept making them beats, and the same people were saying the same thing. Oh, life sucks, and this is happening, and this is going wrong. What am I going to do? And I said, what the hell is going on here? I said, I'm supposed to be sober. I'm supposed to have fun. One day I was in that meeting, and all those people was in that meeting with me. I looked around, and I said, oh, my God, I got to do some service. I got up. I left out of that meeting. I called my sponsor and said, man, get me a job. Get me a job doing something in AA. And he said, the only thing we got is corresponding with the inmates. I said, give me a whole lot of names. And I started writing the inmates, and I got back involved in service, boy. And I tell you, life got better all at once. I didn't see those people no more at the meetings. And I never heard them after that. I never heard them after that. Because I wasn't listening for that. I was listening for joy, fun, laughter. That's what I was listening for. And I began to see that in sobriety. I mean, I got involved in service again like never before, man. I was a GSR, DCM, you name it, I've been it. I've done it one time or another. And it was fun. And you know, my sobriety was one of those where I really wanted AA. I really liked life as the way it was. You know, they told me that I had two lives, drunk and sober. Sober is much better, believe me. Sober is much better. It really is better. I was working in Wall Street, and I retired in 2003, I retired, and I moved to Florida to enjoy the good life. I moved down there in Sunshine State, and I told my wife, when I get out of here, I ain't working no more. I ain't lifting my hand to do nothing. I'm going to get me a pair of short pants and some flip-flops, and I'm going to make AA my home. And Lord have mercy, did that ever happen? Boy, I jumped in the A down there in Florida, went down there, and it was different than in New York. I said, well, that's all right, it's still AA. And they said, yeah. I said, well, that's good enough for me. They said, if you don't drink and make me, you'll stay and get sober. I said, well, that's good enough for me. So I got involved in an inner group, and I started doing the AA down here in Florida, and it was fantastic, you know. I got to tell you, for the first 20 years of my sobriety, it was just like that paint cloud that you ride on. I was on that. I'm still on it, as a matter of fact. It's been 27 years and some change since I had a drink, and I don't be mad about that, you know. Since I ain't drank, I ain't been in jail, I ain't been in a fight, I ain't lost my water. None of that stuff happened since I ain't drank. None of it. And you know, I was talking about, how am I going to talk about Easy Does It? I mean, I was one of those people that, I mean, I was getting stuff done. You know, I was one of them do-it people. If it's got to be done, I'm doing it. But you know what happens when you stop drinking? That stuff gets real. You know, it don't be so easy like it was in your head when you've been doing that stuff when you were drinking. It gets real, real, man. After a couple of times of getting my head bumped, I said, let me back up a little bit and see what's happening here because it ain't easy as I thought. He said, well, what about this Easy Does It stuff they always talk about? What does it mean? Easy does it, but do it. And I come to find out after a while that it was somebody on my side who was taking care of this stuff for me, and I didn't even know about it. He was taking care of all my problems. Everything that was happening in my life good, he did it. And I couldn't understand how had this guy been in my life all this time and I didn't know about it. They said, you didn't ask for him, fool. You got to ask for his help. He just don't give it to you. You got to ask. I said, but I need to know this guy a little bit better. How do you get to know him, man? They said, man, you got to have wisdom and understanding and knowledge to know this guy, man. But he's easy to get along with. He don't ask for much. The only thing he asked you to do is just praise him. I said, I could do that. I mean, I did that all my life with that ball, boy. I mean, that ball drove me like it was a whip that the master would beat my behind. That liquor drove me like that, man. I would do anything for a drink. I mean, anything without even hesitating, without even thinking. Just give me another one. Just give me another one. And I thought my life was fantastic. But you know, I got in this program, and I thought, I'm smart, you know. I should be able to handle this thing with ease. But it don't work like that, folks. It really don't work like that. You got to put some work in this bad boy. If you want to get sober, you won't have to work your butt off. It ain't like a gimme. You know, you go in and you don't drink, and it's all right. All peace and no sir. It don't work like that. You know, there are some hills and valleys in everybody's life. And they say, to each life some rain must fall. And it's true. You know, like I said, for 20-something years, man, I ain't have a problem, hadn't been sick, nothing happened to me. I mean, absolutely nothing. I had all the things that I wanted, and I remember one day, one Christmas, I woke up sitting at the table with my wife. We did our prayer in the morning, and I looked around, and I thought about how grateful I was for having everything that I always wanted, I had. And you know what? It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. I said, something is missing. And I was missing. Finally, I realized that I'm enough. I don't need anybody to validate me anymore. God has said, you're all right. He told me that, you're all right, Floyd. I got you. I got you back. And I said, sure enough. I said, now let me live. He said, that, go ahead on, fool. Go on and enjoy this life. He said, I want you to be here forever. Ain't nothing going to happen to you. I got you. And I said, all right, God. You got my back? He said, I got you. And so life went on like that. And it went on. In 2006, I had my granddaughter down from New York, and we was going to show her a good time, and I got really, really sick. Couldn't understand what was going on with me. I hadn't been sick a day in my life. And I got sick, and I went to the hospital, and they told me, you got a kidney infection or something. And they gave me some pills and say, come back and go to your doctor. And I went to my doctor a few days later, and he said, ain't nothing wrong with you. Take these pills and call me in the morning. I said, fine. I was feeling better that next day, and the next day I was feeling bad. And I remember getting up one morning, got me a cup of coffee, and I stood up, and I fell down, and blood started coming out of every pore in my body. I told my wife, call 911. And I remember the EMT driver came, and they put me in the back of that car, and they got me to the hospital. But before they did, the nurse in the back said, he don't got no pulse and no BP. You guys got him. When I woke up again, there was blood coming up, going through every part of my body that they could put an IV in. They had blood running through my body. And that was in January 2006. When I woke up, it was March the 2nd, 2006. I woke up. I looked down. One of my legs was gone. And the doctor said, did you miss your leg? I looked down and said, what are you talking about? He said, we had to take your leg. I said, well, I'm breathing, right? He said, yeah. I said, okay. Okay, as long as I'm breathing, it's all right. He asked me, say, do you know where you are? I said, I'm in Palm Bay, Florida. He said, no, you're in Jacksonville, Florida, my man. You're in Shands. I said, what's a Shands? He said, that's a hospital. I said, what? He said, you don't remember nothing? I didn't remember my name, folks. Did not remember my name. I was in there for another couple of months, and I went to a rehab and learned how to walk and adjust to this one leg. And, you know, I never give it a thought about why me or anything like that, because I knew that God had my back. You know, I got me one of them artificial legs, and it didn't work. And I told him, I can't walk with this thing. I'm just going to have to learn how to use a crutch or something. And I got sick again in 2008. And the same thing happened. I had another aneurysm. And I lost this other leg. And you know what? This one was painful. This one was real painful. But I'm learning my lesson about easy does it. I'm learning my lesson about having some patience and some tolerance. And I'm learning my lesson about the unconditional love of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You people came, you called, you sent cards, you sent letters, and more of unconditional love that I've never, ever known before. And it helped me, and it healed me. And I began to get better, and I began to thank those people for AA. Thanks for those AA rooms and the people in them, because they care. They love me. They love me back to health. I lost the other leg, and I was saying to myself, you know, it can't get any worse. You know, I mean, I've had everything that could go wrong to go wrong. What else is left, man, you know? And so it went. And so it went on and on like that. But in the meantime, I was giving back. You know, I really appreciated you guys giving me that love. And I thought, well, I can't do much, but I can get on the phone. And I made a little plan that every time in my group, every time somebody had an anniversary, I would call them on that day and wish them a happy birthday. The least I could do. The least that I could do for one individual for one day. Just call them and say happy birthday. And that worked. You know, I got a Matt Talbot group that I do that too. You know, on their birthday, I call them and say happy birthday. And it works. And so we went full circle with this unconditional love stuff. And Easy does it. I learned my lesson that I just got to wait. I can't be in a hurry because God don't got no watch. He'll say, okay, but he might do it tomorrow. He might do it forever. You know, it might take forever to get it done because he don't got no timetable. I had to realize that, you know, it's not my time, but God's time. That's how this thing works, you know. And so I got back, and then that brought me to Mayor this year, what I'm talking about. Now, like I said, when I started to talk, I said, if I live and breathe, that I will never miss another conference. And so when I got the application to fill it out, I went online and got my stuff all in, and that was in September, and I was good to go, you know. Had no idea I was going to be a speaker now. Now, that's another story there, you know. You know that ego thing, right? This thing up here. They sent me a letter to speak at the International Convention. Man, wow, who am I? But then I found out a lot of other people I know are speaking to. So that just bust my butt. You know. How it make you feel? Well, you're not all of that. You're just another member. And so the bottom line of this whole AA deal is this, you know, is what I've learned, is find myself a home group, get myself a sponsor somebody if I can, but make a commitment to AA. This lady that said that she got that letter, she said one other thing that really turned me on. She said, I want to do more, give more, and be more to Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Floyd, and thanks for letting me share.
Wow, thank you, Floyd. Oh, my God. I don't know if I would have that positive attitude of Floyd. I hope so. I mean, I have worked hard. I have done stuff in this program. I'm happy. I'm lucky enough to have two women who have sponsored me right out front there, waving and smiling. And I think there would have been a lot of do it that I didn't do, except for the two of them and their ilk. But anyhow. Poor Clive H. from Pennsylvania has been sitting there, and if he's anything like me, it's like, oh, God, let it be over. Anyhow, let's hear from Clive.
Settle down. First of all, I want to thank two speakers that came before me. That's a tough act to follow. My name's Clive. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here today. Like Floyd, I attended my first international conference in Montreal in 1985. We didn't run into each other, but we were both there, and you know, I'm grateful for that. My sobriety date is March the 1st of 1980. And I got the email from New York too, and you know, I went through a whole sort of series of emotions about that. But you know, yesterday, Susie, my friend over here, put a little sticker on my thing that says honesty. You know, so you know, I'm going to try and be as honest as I can. You know, I came to the United States in 1963. I worked for Her Majesty the Queen at her embassy in Washington, D.C. And I ended my career in Her Majesty's prison in back in England. I got sober in a little AA group in the northwest of England. It was called the Macclesfield First Group, and you know, I will always be grateful for that group. Because what they did, they carried the fifth tradition of this fellowship. You know, they carried the message to the suffering alcoholic. You know, a lot of times at the end of our meetings, we say, you know, we pray for the people that haven't made it here yet. Well, you know, I was one of the people that had made it here yet, but didn't believe I needed to be here yet, you know. And, you know, so they persevered with me. And, you know, to cut a long story short, you know, I haven't required a drink, you know, since, you know, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been here before. And so, you know, this talk today really, for me, you know, is about my kids. You know, Bruce, Adam, Elizabeth, Matt, John, Jim, Katie, Eric, Andrea, and 8 grandchildren. You know, 3 of those kids are my stepchildren, the rest are my biological children. You know, now when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had drank my way through 2 marriages, you know, I caused more devastation. In my ex-wives and children's lives that any person should have been allowed to do, you know. And so I have to remind myself that today that, you know, I have to be true to Alcoholics Anonymous and try, you know, the best I can to be, you know, a better parent, a better husband, you know, a better person today. And Alcoholics Anonymous has done that for me, you know. So, you know, thank you to my children, you know. 3 of my children, even after 30 years of sobriety, will not acknowledge me today. And that's because of the damage that I caused to them. You know. But I also have adult children today that have never seen me drink. You know, and I'm grateful for that. I came into that group in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the first things they did, they made me fill out these 20 questions. You know, and I said, well, how many do I have to get right? And they said, it doesn't matter, only alcoholics take the test. So, and, you know, that was very true for me. You know, I was here, but, you know, I wasn't sure that, you know, that I belonged, but, you know, as a result of that home group, which for me is the most important thing that happened in my life, I got a sponsor. You know, little Irish fellow, his name was Ginger. And, you know, he took this little English Protestant under his wing. And, you know, we have no prejudices here. And, and, you know, he started to take me to meetings and, you know, teach me a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. And, And I got involved with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was one of these alcoholics that, you know, I jumped in right away. And, you know, I spent the first 2 years of my sobriety working with a little lady. Her name was Bunty. And I didn't have a car and she drove. So we would do these 12-step calls. There weren't any rehabs and places around back then where I got sober. And so we would do a lot of 12-step calls. And you know, she would pitch the AA message, and I would clean the apartment. That's how it worked, you know. And, you know, I'd collect all the bottles and all that stuff and throw them in the trash. And you know what? It kept me sober, you know, because, you know, I was still a little bit cocky. And, you know, I had guys sleeping on my I was living in subsidized housing. And so I had these guys sleep on my living room floor a lot, and I don't know whether a lot of them got sober, but they kept me sober, you know. And, you know, I had a mother who didn't want me to be a drunk, but she didn't want me to be one of you people. You know? So, and, you know, I said to my sponsor, you know, what can I say to you? He said, nothing. You know, he said, you know, show up when you're supposed to show up, do what you're supposed to do, and God will take care of the rest. And I showed up at her house one day, and she said, thank you so much what you did for John. And I said, John who? And she said, you helped John get into a rehab. It turned out that this fellow was the son of her best friend from her school days. From that moment on, she understood Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and because of the power of example that we have. And You know, after I'd been sober a couple of years, I had the opportunity to come back to the United States and, just try and start to, make amends and do what I was supposed to do. And, I had this opportunity to come back here and, and I started to, I did the same thing when I got back here. I got a home group, got a sponsor, and started to go to meetings. And then I started to get involved in service. I went to the bathroom one day and came back with the GSR tag, But what I did, I got over-involved. I was like general chair at one group. I was secretary at another group. I was GSR. I was in the group rep. I was all those things, I was running like crazy. And, fortunately, my sponsor slowed me down a little bit and, taught me about, easy does it, but do it. And, but I didn't have to do everything, when I came here, I was in debt. I had all these problems. I owed the IRS about $10,000, and I asked my sponsor, what shall I do? And he said, pay him. I didn't want to do that, but I did. Reluctantly I did it, and it took a long time. But, and I started to do those things that, are really important in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm still involved in service today. I've moved around quite a little bit. I moved to the state of Maine after I'd been back here about 5 years. I worked in a adolescent recovery program with kids from around 13 to 20, and I did that for about 8 years. And during that period of time, I started to grow a little bit in AA, and it was also very painful because, I was working with kids that were the same as my kids, I had 3 children that I abandoned because of my drinking. And, I was working with these kids that had experienced some of these things. And it really got me in touch with what I really needed to do, with the do-it part, Because, I'm a world-class procrastinator, When I drank, if I got a bill in the mail, it went in the trash, Hence the IRS, I went through life with my fingers crossed, it'll go away, somehow it will get taken care of. Well, it took care of me eventually, but that was the kind of way I lived. And, Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, that this easy does it thing means that, I have to slow down. I'm not in charge, I need to help. The hardest thing that, I ever have to do. In Philadelphia, we have a thing called a green card. It's not AA literature, but it comes out of our intergroup office. And, on that card, one of the things it suggests you do is to do something for somebody else and not get found out. Hard job for me. But those are the kind of things that I look at about easy does it today, But I do have to do it. Yeah. I can only do it one day at a time. I don't have a whole lot else to say except to, just to share with you a little bit about my experience with, the conferences, especially the conference in Montreal that Floyd talked about, At that conference, Lois Wilson spoke at the big meeting on Saturday night. And I don't know, there's probably 45,000 people there. And she talked very briefly. I think she was about 91 at the time. She's since passed. She talked about how her husband Bill and Dr. Bob had changed the world with Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think there was a dry eye in that whole place. If I have any doubts about what this thing does for us, it went away that night. Ever since that day, I am totally convinced that my life was saved by Alcoholics Anonymous. At the end of that conference, I attended the closing ceremonies for the Alateen portion of that conference. And on one side of me was my sponsor from Ireland. And on the other side was a woman called Bridie, who some of you know in this room from the Delaware County area, and I introduced them to each other. It turned out that they grew up in the same town in Ireland. Now, you know, there are no coincidences in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and we sat there and the bells were ringing in that square, and a 14-year-old kid shared that day about her husband, her father was still drinking and her mother was dying of cancer. And this kid had so much serenity, it was unbelievable. You know, and, you know, those are the lessons that, you know, I continually learn by coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Well, thank you, Clive. That was great. I got you guys are all very positive. I'm sitting here thinking like, well, I did it, but I didn't really want to, and I rather think about things with a scotch, with the rain pouring, maybe. And honestly, it was like getting myself past the thought, you know, and as I think it was Nancy said, you know, you... Somebody said everything. You know, to think about it, to have a plan for it is one thing, but then to do the real work, to bring it into your, integrate it with your life is a whole different thing. You can BS in an AA meeting for a long time, but living your life to, you know, to the best of your ability through the working the steps is a whole much more difficult process. So, okay. Well, we're a little early. I don't know. Now I don't know what to do. That's not in my script. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay.
That's it.
Oh no no no. No, it might now.
How do you do it?
How did I do it? Look, they're all leaving. They heard that, and they rush out the door. That's not good. Let's have some comments from the floor. I love to talk, and I'm you know, a gadfly in that, but not right now. Oh, okay. Okay, you line up at the middle.
My name is Preston. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Yonkers, New York. And I want to thank the speakers, and I want to thank Floyd also, because Floyd was an original member of my Matt Tabbitt group, 74, up in eastern Pennsylvania from Brooklyn, New York. And I want to congratulate him for that. You know, it's powerful, man, that I'm down here. I'm a World Convention virgin. I heard a lady say that in the last meeting I was at. So it's my first one. I got sober down here in San Antonio, Texas. I was in the military, and I had 3 DWIs, and I, for some reason, I had to come back here. You know what I mean? I had to come back here. And, it's, you know, I'm so grateful that I came back here. A guy that got me into it, my sponsor, was a guy named Bob. And Bob was from Boston. And he took me to the steps and everything like that, man. I was so grateful, man, that this guy... you know, took care of me. I would love to find this guy down here. If it happens, it happens. I got my other sponsor sitting right next to me right here that I have today. You know, I came down here on a motorcycle, you know, from New York, man. Got caught in a tornado. You know what I mean? And I'm just, you know, I'm just really so grateful, man, that, you know, I was 10 minutes from the hotel and couldn't even get there. We had to stop at another hotel. You know, I mean, I've been sober since 1991, man. And I'm so, so happy, man. And you know, you talked about that easy does it. I'm going to tell you a real quick story, and then I'll shut up, let somebody else speak. I had this easy does it stick on the back of my 1974 Dodge Dart that I had. And I was running up and down the road with this thing, man, like a lunatic. And I'm saying to myself, you know, somebody seen me one day at a meeting, and they said, yo, Preston, what are you doing? You got that easy does it sticking on your car, and you're running up and down, you know, the highway with that thing on, like a lunatic. And I didn't realize what the significance of that easy does it really means until that time. You know what I mean? And when I got a hold of that, that really changed my whole life. You know what I mean? I really understood it. You know, I really understood what that easy does it is all about now. And then, you know, I was unemployed before I came here this year. I was unemployed for like 3 months. And I said, you know what, I got to find some money, man, somehow to get here. And I put like $1,000 away, man, just held on to it. And I was able to survive, pay my mortgage and everything like that. And I still got here. And that's important, man. You know what I mean? And I know that this program works no matter what. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.